Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Don't blink. If you're a blinker, cut your eyelids off. You know, this is not going to be for the faint of heart.
Even if you didn't hear him say it, maybe you just saw the words on a piece of paper and didn't know which coach was saying them, you would know it was Tomlin.
It's put up and shut up time.
I don't fear sudden death.
We have an entire library of Mike Tomlin quips. Fantastic.
They moved their units.
It's going to take a ridiculous effort.
We make no excuses. We seek no comfort.
I just appreciate his vocabulary. It's so unique.
Never say never, but never.
Boy, you better knuckle up.
He didn't urinate down his leg, man. That's a great place to begin.
I'm not asking you to go out there and be Tom Brady on your first day. I'm just asking you to not pee on yourself. That's all we need from you, and you're ahead of the game.
The cut and paste component was the cut and paste component.
It's a football feeding frenzy. After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It gives you that tingle to shoot a hostage, if you will.
I love Mike Tomlin. It makes me feel as though football is so close. Gets me jazzed up. Plus, we had a conversation with an NFL reporter earlier on the show, if you missed it, about an hour ago from the New York Post. Ryan Dunleavy was watching Lions and Giants and all the thrill there in the rain at MetLife Stadium. But more than that, we talked about some of the big storylines as we are now inside of a month. You guys, inside of a month until the NFL season kicks off with opening night. Ravens and Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium. Yes, the banner. Yes, the hype. Yes, the quest for a three-peat that gets underway at the home of the Super Bowl champions. And so I'm all about it. I will stop short of calling this a Football Friday because we're not quite there yet. But I will say it's a free-for-all, goofy, fun Friday. And sometimes that includes a little preseason football sugar. I don't know where I came up with that. Sometimes I make up the dumbest stuff. A little sugar from the NFL. I've got posts up on both Twix and Facebook, and there's different GIFs. I'm telling you, I'm turning into a GIF girl. I feel like it's videos and it's photos that attract people's attention on social media. That's what makes it stand out. So I guess I'll be a shameless GIF girl now. I have two different characters from the NFL, names that I hope you will, well, you'll be able to conjure up immediately. You'll know who these guys are. But the question is really the bigger issue. So as much as I want you to go and look at the pictures, look at the shiny objects. It's like USA Today when they came out and they became a really popular newspaper. That is eons ago now. I got to figure out when USA Today printed its first paper. But when USA Today came out and it was charts and it was colors and it was photos, that was really how it attracted attention. It was really how it became a popular newspaper. And the format itself is what captivated people. I looked it up. The launch of USA Today, are you ready? Actually coming up on the anniversary. September 14th, 1982. Initially in Baltimore and Washington, D.C. For a, oh my gosh, Andrew is working with us for a second straight night on the other side of the double pane glass. Take a wild guess how much USA Today cost on the streets of Baltimore and D.C. back in 1982?
10 cents?
25 cents. Have you ever seen, maybe you haven't because you're much younger, have you ever seen those newspaper, are they holders, I guess, those, they're dispensers, but they look like trash cans except they have a glass pane on the front and you put your quarter in and open up what is the hatch at the front and pull out your newspaper? Do you ever see those?
I've seen them on TV, but there's empty ones by Penn Station. Like, they're there physically, but there's nothing in them.
Gotcha. Yeah, they're leftovers. They survived the Holocaust, probably. Would survive the Holocaust. So, 1982 to 2024. But so much has changed, of course. But here's the thing. When you have the adjusted for inflation price, it still would be affordable at 79%. 79%. 79 cents. I mean, three quarters instead of one quarter. Still pretty affordable for a newspaper, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know whether or not that's even what people are willing to spend these days, right? Because newspapers are, well, they're going the way of the dinosaurs. They're just not as popular. I really never liked getting ink on my fingers. That was my issue. But I did love it when I was reading, when I'd be traveling, I did love reading USA Today because, yeah, there's all these photos and bright graphs and colors everywhere that really attract your attention. So USA Today, that's what I feel like when we're talking about the attraction of the NFL. We're talking about just kind of the pomp, the circumstance, and the bling. All of those things. The bright, shiny colors, the lights, the broadcasts, the big hits, though not much in preseason. The big touchdowns, though, again, not much in preseason. But it's worth it. It's worth it to get just a taste of it, be kind of captivated by it, and then, all right, we'll get back to business again. So a couple of games last night, tripleheader tonight, and then a full slate on Saturday, a couple of games on Sunday as well. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Got the gifts up. Again, a little bit like the USA Today flair, where the photos attract your attention. And because they're football and they're gifts on social, that should fly. So you can look at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page. And what we're asking you is simple. You can be a homer, you cannot be a homer. Roughly half the NFL playoff field turns over every year. Who are the top candidates to make the postseason after missing out in 2023? All right, so got a few posts up already. Some are simple, not complicated. All right, so from the AFC, first answer, and this came from Twix, is the Jets, which might be an easy one. If Aaron Rodgers can stay healthy, and we talked about the Jets as well as the Giants, so two teams on kind of opposite ends of the spectrum, but we talked about the Jets and Giants with Ryan Dunleavy, and I asked him about the Jets, and we're going to bring back part of that interview a little bit later on. You could certainly get it on podcast. But he points to a roster replete with star players. What they were missing? A quarterback, but I'm not sure it's that simple. So the Jets are an easy answer if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy. But what about the coaching staff? That's my question. That's my counter. So that came from not Kenny. Another answer, Tim goes with the Bengals, which I would agree. The Bengals are they're one that you would think would be a no-brainer if Joe Burrow is healthy all season. They still have a great roster. But here's my but, my devil's advocate, but I like big buts and I cannot lie. That's a tough division. Is it the toughest division in football? There's a chance that all four teams in the AFC North could end up making the playoffs, but it's unlikely because the AFC is stacked. So that means there will be teams on the outside looking in. This is not a question that I would ever pose just because it's not really my personality. I tend to stay on the sunny side of the street. I tend to go mostly positive. although I can be snarky and sarcastic in times, as sarcasm is my love language. But who is the worst team in the AFC North? That's a tough question to answer. I don't even know how to answer it. So I could say Steelers just because of their quarterback issues and completely starting over. But I don't really believe that because I'm a big believer in Mike Tomlin and in that franchise and in their winning foundation. But every team in that division finished above 500 last year. So the worst team is relative. But I do think the Bengals have a great shot to be back in the playoffs again. We'll be back in the high life again. Nope. Ben on our Facebook page gives me the entire list of playoff teams that he's got for each conference. So he has the Falcons and the Eagles, as well as, well, there is no team called the Redskins, but the Falcons, the Eagles, Washington as the three new teams in the NFC. I'm doing this on the fly because he listed all of them himself. But yeah, he's got Philadelphia, Atlanta, Washington getting back in from the NFC. And then from the AFC, Bengals and Chargers, maybe because of Jim Harbaugh. Seems like they have had some talent in recent years, just been unable to get everybody on the same page. And yes, there have been some ridiculous coaching decisions and coaching moves that not just Chargers fans, entire NFL fan base looking at. And it had become a thing in the past, chargering. They're chargering, which essentially means finding creative ways to lose games that no one's ever come up with before. But I like that Ben is outside the box. So which teams in the NFL will make the playoffs after having missed it at least last year? Right? So that's the whole deal. You got to be a new team that didn't make it last year. It's After Hours on our Facebook page. Our show Twix account is where I'm retweeting your answers. So if you too would like to see your name in the marquee, bright lights in big city. Why am I so weird right now? At Amy After Hours is where you can see the retweets and see the answer, see the thread, if you will. I'm wondering if anyone is going to say Seattle Seahawks. Youngest coach in the NFL. Not that that means anything. We've got some good, young, quality coaches in the league right now. Gerard Mayo, Raheem Morris, maybe not as young as I think, but Gerard Mayo and Mike McDonald in Seattle, Mike McDaniel in Miami, and then how about Sean McVay still in Los Angeles? He came in so young that he's still young. I bet coaching has given him some new gray hairs. Zach Taylor, another young guy. How about Jonathan Gannon in Arizona? Shane Steichen with the Colts. I mean, these are guys who, not Raheem, but didn't have previous head coaching experience, but are getting these gigs because of the systems that they're in and the coaches that they're under. So it's a rash of young, bright, insightful, let's say creative, new head coaches, and they have their chance to make their mark on the league, similar to a lot of the rookie quarterbacks and young quarterbacks, not all rookies. But man, it used to be that we had a ton of veteran, future Hall of Fame quarterbacks patrolling the NFL, and now it's a bunch of young guys. Not that they aren't dynamic and a lot of fun to watch. Think CJ Stroud from last season, of course. But the league, in terms of its premier positions, quarterback, head coach, seems to be getting younger and younger. And Mike McDonald is one of those guys. The Seahawks, I don't know what to make of them yet. I don't love that they're in a similar place with their quarterback situation. But I do like the fresh blood, the change, new perspective with Mike McDonald. And he's trying to bring a different energy. It's weird to say that, right? Because Pete Carroll had so much energy. He probably still has energy. And whether he's on the sidelines or he's watching from an office or a suite somewhere, maybe he still wants to coach somewhere, but you can imagine he's still chomping on his gum and running up and down. But Mike McDonald wants to give them a new edge and a new intensity, just a different gritty energy, but also think of it this way. He wants them to kind of walk the line. He's okay with them being so intense that you wonder if they're going to blow up at any point. Yeah, he's looking for guys who are right there on the edge.
We're right on the line right now, and I think the guys realize that. Like, hey, you know, let's take care of one another. We definitely don't want people fighting out here and stuff, and especially against our own teammates. But and then DK gave a great message at the end of the practice, just kind of putting us everything in perspective. The guys finished it out the right way, so proud of our guys.
Right, so in addition to feeling like they're bringing that intensity and they're right on the edge, and the line helps me visualize it, you got to play emotional, of course. You got to be edgy. You got to have the intensity, but you don't want to go over the line. Certainly don't want to be hurting your own teammates or even joint practices, other teams. At the same time, you want to bring that sense of urgency despite the fact that it's early August. And early on, what is he like from his team?
Yeah, we've been getting after it. It's, I'm proud of how we responded today. We came out, we were ready to practice. I don't know what the numbers are, but, we've been out here, I don't know, 14 of the last 16 days. I think we're tired of going against one another, you know, but the guys are spirited. We had a great practice, and we're excited for Saturday.
So if you didn't see the story, DK Metcalf was swinging a helmet at a cornerback. And yeah, multiple fights break out. They're getting chippy with it. A little bit of extracurricular activity. And that's what I mean about the line. It's okay to have emotion, even in August, especially when you think you're working on something new as a team and you like how it feels. A young coach who brings that energy, a different energy than Pete Carroll. But you want to make sure that you're channeling the emotions instead of allowing them to control you. DK Metcalf certainly can be an emotional guy. Swinging a helmet, fights breaking out, scuffling. And Mike McDonald did stop the practice at least one time to kind of speak to these guys this week, making sure that they understand where the line is. Because it would be just dumb to allow that emotion to fester and then boil over to the point where you're taking your frustrations out on each other. So I like it, but it takes a bold coach to allow his guys to get that close to the line this early in the preseason. So will it translate to the field? That's a big deal. That's the question. Jeff sends me this message on Twix. I used to read the new USA Today at JMU in Virginia, 1982. Color newspaper was it. That's what I mean. It was the colors. It was the graphs. It was the diagrams. It was the little cutouts on each page. It wasn't dull. It was an experience for our newspaper reading senses. 1982. I did not read it when I was a kiddo. But by the time I got into college, and well, maybe not college, just out of college, when I did read papers or when I did want to keep up with the news and I wasn't doing TV or radio, USA Today, it was. That's quite the tenure. 40 plus years. But honestly, I don't know if it's still available these days. Wait, we got to find that out. Is the USA Today still printing? Hold on. I'm checking it out. Is USA Today still printing? Does anyone out there still get it? Yeah, I know it's online. I just wondered if they're still printing. Printed at 37 sites across the United States and 5 additional sites internationally. Although this is a sad state of newspapers. And as someone who used to read them and as someone who certainly appreciates the value of media, I can understand why newspapers are going the way of dinosaurs, but there is a bit of sadness for me in that respect. USA Today could in the past claim it was the most read national newspaper. So general newspaper, not specific to any one topic. That's what they call it, general interest. It could, in the past, claim it was the most widely read newspaper in the country, national newspaper. At its height, 2.3 million copies per day. 2.3 million copies per day. But even as circulation has plummeted for every newspaper, regardless of general interest or specific, local or national, last year, at the end of 23, remember, 2.3 million at its height, just barely over 113,000 daily circulation for USA Today. Wow. And those numbers are not unique. So I guess it is still a paper you can receive in print. Or you have to get on the website and receive your news that way. There is also a paywall there, too, if you want to go deeper. So different. And it's funny, too, because, well, not funny, haha, but it's fascinating, too, because since I was in college, the predictions about the demise of radio have been replete. They're everywhere. People have been predicting that radio would become outdated and would die off for decades. And we're still here. We're still here. Oh my gosh. Andrew, I wish that you were a little more familiar with our audio folders, because we have a drop of Tom Brady. Gosh, that goes back a few years. We have a drop of Tom Brady still with the Patriots after a Super Bowl win at their championship parade. We're still here. Tried to lead the fans in a chant of, we're still here. That's how I feel about radio. We're still here. You think that you can chase us off the playground, but boom, baby, we are still here. I like it. Well, we'll see if Andrew can find it during the break. At A-Law Radio, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, either one of our social media sites. I kind of know how we got on the USA Today tangent. I was talking about pictures and GIFs and videos on social. Still the same formula. If you can see it, if you can use the visuals, people are more attracted to it on the computer as well, like they were to USA Today. Who are the top candidates to make the postseason after missing out in 2023? And look for my cool GIFs. I did it all by myself. Proud. Proud I am. Good morning to you. Happy Friday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. Here's Amy Lawrence.
Well, you can barely hear the call from NBC of the 400-meter hurdles over the roar of the 80,000 fans who are there in the stadium in Paris. But man, what an impressive performance for Sydney McLaughlin Levroni. Now, she won this event before she was married, going back to Tokyo and 2021. No one has ever captured two gold medals in this event on the women's side. And not just that, but she owns pretty much every world record. She has broken her own world record a half dozen times. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. She is all business, too. Man, the way she trains, I've seen a couple of stories done on her, but one in particular about how she trains with her husband and the incredible rigor that she puts her body through when it comes to weightlifting, not just the reining, but the cross training. It's amazing, but it helps you to understand exactly why she's able to blow away the field and win in world record time. So the call there on NBC, and then she did an interview with Mike Tirico, wrapping up the coverage from Primetime in Paris. I just actually saw it again before the top of the hour. She had a crown that her family was holding for her. And so she wore that, had her gold medal, had the red, white, and blue of the American flag behind her, but did not smile until she was successfully across the line. And actually, her reaction as she was crossing the line is maybe not what Tirico expected, maybe not what you expect either when you hear her talk about blowing away the field.
It's a little terrifying. You don't know how close
everybody
is. Yeah, I mean, it's a huge stadium with a lot of fans. So you don't know if they're cheering because somebody's right on your heels or what. But it encourages you to want to run faster. Just run through the line, finish the race strong. And yeah, it's all you can do every time.
Run like someone's chasing you. But that's an interesting point that I hadn't really thought about. I've never been in that situation before, but 80,000 fans, it's a huge stadium. You're not looking at a video board. Even if there's one in front of you, probably aren't running your fastest if your head is up in the air. And so you're sticking to your form. You've got 10 hurdles to get over in your one lap around the track. And that takes concentration as well. Getting up to full speed and then gathering to leap, then getting up to full speed again, gathering to leap. And she said with that much noise, you don't know if there's someone who's running up behind you. And so she uses the word terrifying to describe just her reaction until she gets across the line, or even as she gets across the line, which I love the reaction of Mike Tirico as she says that on NBC. But then finding out that you set a world record again in your signature event.
Honestly, my coach was just telling me it's no different than practice every single day. We practice this. We practice our race pattern, just running my race. You know, not looking at what's happening to the left and the right, but really focusing on my 10 hurdles. And so I really just wanted to execute. He told me, run this like I'm standing in the middle of the field, timing you through the 200. And so that's what I did. And I felt that pattern. I felt all that practice from the whole season kind of come together today.
She's 25 years old. She last set the world record on June 30th. It's been all of 5 weeks since Sydney McLaughlin Leveroni set a world record. And yeah, 25 years old, no doubt, if she wanted to, she could continue in this event, dominating this event, at least to start the next Olympic cycle. And this is actually billed as a really good battle, or a potential great battle between her and her top competitor, Femke Bol of the Netherlands, is another woman who's known for her prowess in this race. But she didn't have a great race. She said she messed up. It was kind of a strange dichotomy in terms of the visuals. How often we say the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, or I do. It's one of the ways that you can really capture the distinct emotions when it comes to sports, and none more visible or none more stark than seeing Sydney getting the crown from her family and her friends, her coaches. She's getting the American flag from them. She's exulting. They're so proud of her. They're congratulating her. And not even a foot to her right is Bol crying in the arms of what I assume were her parents, because she messed up. She doesn't know how she made the mistake, but she didn't feel good, she said, down the backstretch, and actually got overtaken by another American who finished second. And she just said, I really have no explanation. This is just a bad race. But to do that on the biggest stage after all the years of training. So Sydney sets another world record, and maybe, just maybe, would continue on and be able to do it in Los Angeles. I love that after setting the world record, she says, I knew this was possible. Leave it to her family. Families, right, who embarrass us, to bring a tiara for her to wear around the track after she is captured another gold medal, made history for Team USA. Now, contrast that with a race that happened right before, which was Noah Lyles. When Noah had a secret, he didn't tell anyone until after the race. But to see him, now you want to talk about visuals that are powerful. He leaves the stadium after racing the 200 meters in a wheelchair. What was he keeping from us? What did we not know? Well, you'll have to hear it from him. And how about the basketball performance from Team USA? Not that any of us thought this was impossible. It's a roster full of the best players on the planet, as well as a bunch of future Hall of Famers. They're superstars. But they hadn't been pushed. Which is why the game against Serbia brought out the best in them. I love that they went next level on defense. And so cool to see Steph Curry finally have his Olympic moment. So with preseason football underway, week one, and the Olympics winding down, but some of the high-profile events still to come, it's a good thing it's a Friday, because I don't have time for anything else but watching sports. Okay, that's not even remotely true. But it's fun to say. I'm glad it's almost the weekend. At A-Law Radio, and then on Facebook as well, a lot of you weighing in. The teams in the NFL, and I know it's still a month to go before we kick off regular season, but it's fun to speculate. The teams in the NFL that will return to the playoffs this year after missing out at least last year. Dale on Facebook goes with the Jets, the Raiders, and the Bengals. Andrew just made a face when I said Bengals, or when I said Raiders, sorry. You're thinking not so much. You're meh on the Raiders with Antonio Pierce and no quarterback making the postseason.
500 at best if they're lucky.
All right. Dale, Andrew does not agree with you. So in the AFC, Jets, Raiders, Bengals, Dale goes with the Falcons in the NFC, and they're a pretty popular pick. I'm seeing a bunch of Falcons. 855-212-4227. Happy Fantastic Friday. We can't get all crazy and call it a Football Friday. Not just yet. Let's pump the brakes. But yes, there is football to talk about.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Woke up early about 5 a.m. on Tuesday morning, and you know, I just was feeling really horrible, and I knew it was more than just being sore from the 100. You know, woke up the doctors and we tested, and unfortunately it came up that I was positive for COVID. You know, my first thought was not to panic. You know, thinking, you know, I've been in worse situations. You know, I've run with, you know, worse conditions, I felt, and we just took it day by day, trying to hydrate as much, quarantined off. And I definitely say that it's taken its toll for sure, but I've never been more proud of myself for being able to come out here and getting a bronze medal, where last Olympics I was very disappointed, and this time I couldn't be more proud.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
How about that, Noah Lyles? And the music is perfect, by the way, Andrew. He goes out there and runs the 200 meters, even though he's positive for COVID. He gives it everything he's got to the point where he could barely stand up when he was done winning a bronze medal. So we apologize for the mistake in the update and Anthony saying he wins a gold, but it was a bronze medal for Noah. And yes, he was extremely proud of himself. I would be too. And he decided he would run, even though he was dealing with symptoms. He took the medications that he was allowed to take that would not cause him to forfeit or test positive for a substance that he shouldn't be using. I think Paxlovid was one that he took. And he just gets out there. And yeah, I've watched the race. You wouldn't know anything was wrong with him necessarily. He didn't look strange or look sick, but definitely when he was done, he was spent. But he ran anyway. Amazing what humans can do sometimes, especially when we've trained and planned and we've determined that we've got a goal in mind. So I'm glad that he's happy after establishing himself as the fastest human. He goes out there and wins a second medal in the 200 meters. You hear the call or hear his comments there on NBC. Now, there's still a race that could be on his schedule. Will he compete in the 4x100-meter relay for Team USA?
At the moment, I don't know. I'm feeling more on the side of, you know, letting Team USA do their thing. You know, they've proven with a great certainty that they can handle it without me. And if that's the case coming off of today, then I'm perfectly fine saying, hey, you guys go do your thing. You guys have more than enough speed to be able to handle it and get the gold medal.
Gah, I actually really want to see him run again because I love his personality and his spirit. Here's something funny that I should have mentioned beforehand, how you would never have known that he was sick. When he was introduced, he comes bounding out, leaping, whooping, trying to get the fans all whipped up and fired up. He's gesturing to the crowd and he's yelling. Yeah, he looked, I mean, just as hyped as he did for the 100 meters. And he says that Usain Bolt told him years ago that he just needed to continue to be him, continue to bring the personality and the excitement, the energy, and that would be so good for the sport. And true to form, even though he wasn't feeling well, he did exactly that. And then I can imagine for the fans that were there in the stadium, it was a little bit disconcerting to see him leave in a wheelchair. I do hope that we see him race in the 100 meters. He says he didn't consider sitting out for the 200 meters, that was what he came for and that he'd felt worse in other situations and decided he would run anyway and still wins a bronze. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. USA men's basketball finally gives us what we needed to see. By far my favorite game of the Olympics so far. And it was kind of funny too because social media was reacting in real time, as you can imagine. And I hadn't even started watching the game yet because I was waking up and was going to watch it on tape delay. And then realized very quickly that the Americans were in a big hole against Serbia. So that's how I found out, oh, get your rear end out of bed and get down and watch this game. So I watched the end before I went back and watched the beginning, but got to see the fourth quarter first. And yeah, they were in a double-digit hole, down 11 in the fourth quarter alone. But what happened that impressed me so much, it wasn't offense, defense, the individual made plays, because we know this roster is capable of that. This is an all-NBA, future Hall of Fame roster, and these guys routinely face deficits like this in the NBA. That's no big thing. That's pretty much every night. In multiple arenas in the NBA, how often do we see teams rally from 15 points down? That's no big thing. But the difference with this is, A, it's the first time they'd been pushed. B, the energy and the spirit from the guys on the court and from the bench. It was like they were competing for an NBA championship. Or even more so, that there was no tomorrow. And I guess figuratively, you could say, hey, if you lose, you're done. But it was more than that. It was seeing these guys all come together for a common goal, guys that are not typically teammates. They've only been together now for about a month, and yet they care. That's what's so different. Sure, when the Celtics got into the NBA Finals, they cared, absolutely. But they had not been pushed to the brink at any point in the playoffs. And while they celebrated, and no one likes losing a game, this was a coronation as much as it was an NBA playoff run for them. They faced almost no adversity in the playoffs. And once they got started, they were the clear favorite. Same thing for Team USA. They've got the greatest collection of NBA players that are currently active, right? They've got more NBA players than any other roster, obviously, but they've also got the best of the best. The fact that Jason Tatum, which blows me away, somehow is not among the guys that Steve Kerr believes is the best in the world. He's the coach. He's won multiple NBA titles. He really tightened ranks with the playing time against Serbia. Serbia came out hitting from beyond the arc at an alarming rate, and really it was only Steph who was keeping them in it for a while offensively. The defense, it was lax. Guys were getting wide open shots. But then in that fourth quarter, as they're down by double figures, what mattered is that they all were on the same page and they cared with a sense of urgency, with intensity. It was good to see them push back. I've been waiting on that. So you have a bunch of different moments that these guys can look back on that really turned the tide. It was the defense, not allowing open shots anymore. Even when they gave up offensive rebounds, they were fighting on the inside, fighting in the paint to make sure that the Serbians got nothing easy, locking down man-to-man. And so they turned that defense into offense. Steals that were easy buckets at the other end. Then Kevin Durant hits an elbow jumper, and LeBron drives to the hoop, and Joel Embiid has 7 points in a row. Steph Curry hits the go-ahead three and a couple of big free throws. So it was all hands on deck. And every single break in the action, these guys are yelling. They're in each other's faces. The bench is jumping up and down. High fives everywhere. It was awesome to see. Because you don't get that much in the NBA. During an 82-game season, it's rare that you're going to get a couple of games, maybe, where they have this kind of intensity. So yeah, Team USA was like the Boston Celtics. They're expected to win, but they got pushed, and they maybe got a taste of what it'd be like to come up short, and they found a different gear. And for Steph, this was his Olympic moment. This is the one that we've been waiting to see.
Because I know I'll never get it back. You know, this is probably my one and only time to enjoy this stage, and haven't seen Team USA play for, you know, years, and know, you know, what it means to stand on that podium and get a gold medal around your neck. That's the challenge and the mission for us, and it felt like it was slipping away for a little bit in that game, and to be able to dig deep the way we did, you know, we would love to win by 20 every game, but this was extremely fun, you know, kind of just tough it out win, and just praise God that I was able to stay confident. I haven't had it going at all this whole tournament, and that doesn't mean anything. You just got to stay ready for your moment.
Mike Tirico talking to Steph Curry following the game. And yeah, big deal. Yes, LeBron had a triple-double. He's playing that point forward role. But Steph says, hey, this could be my one and only Olympics run. He is in his mid-30s. So there's no guarantee that he either A, wants to, or B, would be selected for the next team. He hasn't had a huge impact to this point. Devin Booker has been the better guard, or the more impactful guard, I should say. And yet, this is vintage Steph. 9 triples, 36 points. The shouting. I don't know if I saw a shimmy or not, but a steal late, couple of clutch free throws. He and LeBron together celebrating. It was kind of weird, actually, but I really enjoyed it. With my apologies for all those 20-point wins, and maybe that's what they want to see, this was the best of Team USA. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Woke up early about 5 a.m. on Tuesday morning, and you know, I just was feeling really horrible, and I knew it was more than just being sore from the 100. You know, woke up the doctors and we tested, and unfortunately it came up that I was positive for COVID. And, you know, my first thought was not to panic. You know, thinking, you know, I've been in worse situations. You know, I've run with, you know, worse conditions, I felt, and well, we just took it day by day, trying to hydrate as much, quarantined off. And I definitely say that it's taking its toll for sure, but I've never been more proud of myself for being able to come out here and getting a bronze medal, where last Olympics I was very disappointed, and this time I couldn't be more proud.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
How about that, Noah Lyles? And the music is perfect, by the way, Andrew. He goes out there and runs the 200 meters, even though he's positive for COVID. He gives it everything he's got to the point where he could barely stand up when he was done winning a bronze medal. So we apologize for the mistake in the update and Anthony saying he wins a gold, but it was a bronze medal for Noah. And yes, he was extremely proud of himself. I would be too. And he decided he would run, even though he was dealing with symptoms. He took the medications that he was allowed to take that would not cause him to forfeit or test positive for a substance that he shouldn't be using. I think Paxlovid was one that he took. And he just gets out there, and yeah, I've watched the race. You wouldn't know anything was wrong with him necessarily. He didn't look strange or look sick, but definitely when he was done, he was spent. But he ran anyway. amazing what humans can do sometimes, especially when we've trained and planned and we've determined that we've got a goal in mind. So I'm glad that he's happy after establishing himself as the fastest human. He goes out there and wins a second medal in the 200 meters. You hear the call or hear his comments there on NBC. Now, there's still a race that could be on his schedule. Will he compete in the 4x100-meter relay for Team USA?
At the moment, I don't know. I'm feeling more on the side of, you know, letting Team USA do their thing. You know, they've proven with a great certainty that they can handle it without me. And if that's the case coming off of today, then I'm perfectly fine saying, hey, you guys go do your thing. You guys have more than enough speed to be able to handle it and get the gold medal.
Gah, I actually really want to see him run again because I love his personality and his spirit. Here's something funny that I should have mentioned beforehand, how you would never have known that he was sick. When he was introduced, he comes bounding out, leaping, whooping, trying to get the fans all whipped up and fired up. He's gesturing to the crowd and he's yelling. Yeah, he looked, I mean, just as hyped as he did for the 100 meters. And he says that Usain Bolt told him years ago that he just needed to continue to be him, continue to bring the personality and the excitement, the energy, and that would be so good for the sport. And true to form, even though he wasn't feeling well, he did exactly that. And then I can imagine for the fans that were there in the stadium, it was a little bit disconcerting to see him leave in a wheelchair. I do hope that we see him race in the 100 meters. He says he didn't consider sitting out for the 200 meters, that was what he came for and that he'd felt worse in other situations and decided he would run anyway and still wins a bronze. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. USA men's basketball finally gives us what we needed to see. By far my favorite game of the Olympics so far. And it was kind of funny, too, because social media was reacting in real time, as you can imagine. And I hadn't even started watching the game yet because I was waking up and was going to watch it on tape delay. And then realized very quickly that the Americans were in a big hole against Serbia. So that's how I found out, oh, get your rear end out of bed and get down and watch this game. So I watched the end before I went back and watched the beginning, but got to see the fourth quarter first. And yeah, they were in a double-digit hole, down 11 in the fourth quarter alone. But what happened that impressed me so much, it wasn't offense, defense, the individual made plays, because we know this roster is capable of that. This is an all-NBA, future Hall of Fame roster, and these guys routinely face deficits like this in the NBA. That's no big thing. That's pretty much every night. In multiple arenas in the NBA, how often do we see teams rally from 15 points down? That's no big thing. But the difference with this is, A, it's the first time they've been pushed. B, the energy and the spirit from the guys on the court and from the bench. It was like they were competing for an NBA championship. Or even more so, that there was no tomorrow. And I guess figuratively, you could say, hey, if you lose, you're done. But it was more than that. It was seeing these guys all come together for a common goal, guys that are not typically teammates. They've only been together now for about a month, and yet they care. That's what's so different. Sure, when the Celtics got into the NBA Finals, they cared, absolutely. But they had not been pushed to the brink at any point in the playoffs. And while they celebrated, and no one likes losing a game, this was a coronation as much as it was an NBA playoff run for them. They faced almost no adversity in the playoffs. And once they got started, they were the clear favorite. Same thing for Team USA. They've got the greatest collection of NBA players that are currently active, right? They've got more NBA players than any other roster, obviously, but they've also got the best of the best. The fact that Jason Tatum, which blows me away, somehow is not among the guys that Steve Kerr believes is the best in the world. He's the coach. He's won multiple NBA titles. He really tightened ranks with the playing time against Serbia. Serbia came out hitting from beyond the arc at an alarming rate, and really it was only Steph who was keeping them in it for a while offensively. The defense, it was lax. Guys were getting wide open shots. But then in that fourth quarter, as they're down by double figures, what mattered is that they all were on the same page and they cared with a sense of urgency, with intensity. It was good to see them push back. I've been waiting on that. So you have a bunch of different moments that these guys can look back on that really turned the tide. It was the defense not allowing open shots anymore. Even when they gave up offensive rebounds, they were fighting on the inside, fighting in the paint to make sure that the Serbians got nothing easy, locking down man to man. And so they turned that defense into offense. Steals that were easy buckets at the other end. Then Kevin Durant hits an elbow jumper and LeBron drives to the hoop. And Joel Embiid has 7 points in a row. Steph Curry hits the go-ahead three and a couple of big free throws. So it was all hands on deck. And every single break in the action, these guys are yelling. They're in each other's faces. The bench is jumping up and down. High fives everywhere. It was awesome to see. Because you don't get that much in the NBA. During an 82-game season, it's rare that you're going to get a couple of games, maybe, where they have this kind of intensity. So yeah, Team USA was like the Boston Celtics. They're expected to win, but they got pushed. And they maybe got a taste of what it'd be like to come up short. And they found a different gear. And for Steph, this was his Olympic moment. This is the one that we've been waiting to see.
Because I know I'll never get it back. You know, this is probably my one and only time to enjoy this stage, and haven't seen Team USA play for, you know, years, and know, you know, what it means to stand on that podium and get a gold medal around your neck. That's the challenge and the mission for us, and it felt like it was slipping away for a little bit in that game, and to be able to dig deep the way we did, you know, we would love to win by 20 every game, but this was extremely fun, you know, kind of just tough it out win, and just praise God that I was able to stay confident. I haven't had it going at all this whole tournament, and that doesn't mean anything. You just got to stay ready for your moment.
Mike Tirico talking to Steph Curry following the game. And yeah, big deal. Yes, LeBron had a triple-double. He's playing that point-forward role. But Steph says, hey, this could be my one and only Olympics run. He is in his mid-30s. So there's no guarantee that he either A, wants to, or B, would be selected for the next team. He hasn't had a huge impact to this point. Devin Booker has been the better guard, or the more impactful guard, I should say. And yet, this is vintage Steph. 9 triples, 36 points. The shouting. I don't know if I saw a shimmy or not, but a steal late, couple of clutch free throws. He and LeBron together celebrating. It was kind of weird, actually, but I really enjoyed it. With my apologies for all those 20-point wins, and maybe that's what they want to see, this was the best of Team USA. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.